Gender Ideology's Attack on Our Humanity by J.W. Richards. The account of God's creation of human beings in Genesis 1 is sparse and precise. After creating the land animals on the sixth day, the day doesn't end, as the reader expects from the pattern followed on the previous days. Instead, this day has an encore. Rather than just speaking, God speaks to himself. Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over the livestock, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God he created him. Male and female he created them. Genesis 1, 26 and 27, ESV. Note the reference to a single man, that is, human. God created man in his own image. So each of us is fully human, but with a difference. Male and female, he created them. The suggestion is that though each of us is an image bearer, humanity can't fulfill what it means without this difference. Difference is not quite the right word, though. Complementarity is better. When we come together in the right way, we are much greater than the sum of our parts. One man or woman alone can't reproduce. Neither can two men or two women. But exactly one man and one woman can give rise to the entire human race. Of all human traditions and revered texts, this bundle of truth claims is most clearly and fully expressed here in Genesis. At the same time, it includes basic truths that are or have been known everywhere, in every time and culture. There are men and women. They are both human, but they are different. Men are not women. Women are not men. Men cannot become women. Women cannot become men. It is not possible to be a man but have a woman's body, or to be a woman with a man's body. Until recently, this list of propositions would have seemed trite, but we live at the shocking moment in history when each of these claims is contested. That's because an ideology has overrun our institutions, our schools, our media, our laws, our medicine, even some of our churches. Let's call it gender ideology. Most people really became aware of it only in the last decade. In 2015, so-called, quote, transgender, end quote, people, such as Caitlyn Jenner, formerly Bruce Jenner, suddenly appeared on dozens of magazine covers. And not only recently have most people realized what's happening in schools and gender clinics. Children are being taught they can be born in the wrong body, and doctors are, quote, treating, end quote, this condition with sterilizing drugs and surgeries on minors. This so-called, quote, gender-affirming care, end quote, reveals this ideology for what it is. The greatest assault on human nature, on our maleness and femaleness, that has ever been devised or imagined. Here's how it happened. In 2007, the year the first iPhone was released, there was one pediatric gender clinic in the United States. There are now at least 79, and that doesn't include the 260 or so Planned Parenthood, quote, clinics, end quote, that dispense cross-sex hormones, quote, like candy, end quote, to minors. These clinics are where many minors who struggle with their sexed bodies go to receive gender-affirming care. It starts with social transition, usually in school, and often behind the backs of parents. A boy who, quote, identifies, end quote, as a girl will assume a new name. This will include the pronouns and bathrooms of his new identity. Quote, social transition, end quote, sounds benign, but it's a psychological intervention with long-term effects. And the whole school must participate. No student or teacher is exempt. Punishment is swift for any who dare to resist. The child may move on to puberty-blocking drugs if he or she is still early in puberty, and then to cross-sex hormones, that is, estrogen for boys and testosterone for girls. Next will come surgery to remove healthy breasts, penises, testicles, uteruses, and ovaries. The details, of course, depend upon the sex of the child. Finally, this pathway leads to fashioning faux penises for the girls, vaginas for the boys, and various and sundry for those who identify as, say, non-binary, that is, neither male nor female, or both, or somewhere in between. And don't forget lifelong cross-sex hormones and complications that are as common as they are unadvertised. Defining gender ideology. Sterilizing teens is the reduction to the absurd of gender ideology. But what exactly does it mean? As it has erupted in our culture, it displaces the sexual binary of male and female, which describes all mammals, including humans, with two subjective notions. First, an internal sense of gender called gender identity that is distinct from, even in discord with, the body, and second, mere, quote, sex assigned at birth, end quote. Think of Gnosticism retooled for the 21st century, and you'll get the basic idea. If you were barely following this debate, say, 10 years ago, you might have thought that the claim of gender ideology was simply that a man, referring to biological sex, could identify as a woman, gender, and so be transgender. The ideology is more radical than that. To see this, compare an early version of the gender-bred person with the gender unicorn. These two popular images are designed to train young children in the gender mysteries obscure to their parents. The gender-bred person, created by Sam Killerman, teaches children to think of their friends and themselves not simply as boys or girls, but as a compound of different gendered aspects that exist along a potentially infinite spectrum: gender identity, gender expression, gender attraction, and biological sex. The gender-bred person went through several versions. As late as version 3.3, it still included the category of biological sex. Orthodox adherents of gender ideology, however, objected to it for just this reason. The image was also problematic because it tied gender identity to a biological brain. Oh, and it still looked a lot like a gingerbread man. The gender unicorn solved these problems. The locus of identity is no longer a brain, but an ethereal thought bubble of a rainbow. And rather than biological sex, our purple androgynous unicorn merely has, quote, sex assigned at birth, end quote. Sex, that is biological sex, has now been fully displaced by an internal self-perception and by a social convention rooted in the subjective choice of the doctor attending one's birth. To resist this toxic ideology, we, and especially our children, need to build up resistant antibodies. Here are two ways to do that. First, get clear on biological sex. And second, show that the Christian view of human beings captures the complex reality far better than the popular modern distortions. Bulletproof definitions of biological sex. An idea so bizarre, so insane, that it contradicts basic biology could come to dominate the commanding heights of culture through only a campaign of confusion. The main way gender ideologues have confused the public is by falsely claiming that disorders of sexual development, often mislabeled intersex conditions, prove that there are more than two sexes, or that the sexes are somehow fluid or mere endpoints on a spectrum. Such disorders occur in 0.018% of the population. In some cases, newborns have ambiguous genitalia. This makes the task of determining sex more complex. Nevertheless, appealing to these disorders to justify gender ideology is an intentional diversion. First, none of these conditions produces other sexes or, quote, genders, end quote. Second, gender ideology provides no new insights into these disorders. Third, people who identify as transgender or non-binary rarely have one of these disorders. And fourth, no such disorders correspond to the growing list of, quote, gender identities, end quote. Now, everyone intuits the difference between men and women. And if you remember high school biology, you know that childbearing, XX and XY chromosomes, and the like have something to do with sex. But biology is complex, and definitions are hard to get just right. A good definition, however, will prevent you from falling for the campaign of confusion. Defining sex precisely. Any good definition of sex will point to the organization of our bodies for reproduction. It will refer to what happens under normal development while accounting for disorders, and it will accommodate the fact that organisms have and do different things at different stages of development. Here's one way to define male and female. A human male is, minimally, a member of the human species that under normal development produces relatively small mobile gametes, sperm, at some point in his life cycle and has a reproductive and endocrine system oriented around the production of that gamete. A human female is, minimally, a member of the human species that under normal development produces relatively large, relatively immobile gametes, ova, at some point in her life cycle, and has a reproductive and endocrine system oriented around the production of that gamete. Again, under normal development, a male has XY chromosomes, testes, and a penis. Females, under normal development, have XX chromosomes, a uterus, ovaries, a cervix, and a vagina. Under normal development, a female can carry, give birth to, and nurse offspring at some point during her life cycle. Males cannot. Males and females also differ in the prevalence of hormones such as testosterone and estrogen, respectively, and they develop distinct secondary differences in their bodies under the influence of these hormones, especially during puberty. There is no gamete and no body plan that corresponds to the recent category of gender identity. Gender identity, as a concept within modern gender and queer theory, is not at all the same thing as various disorders of sexual development, none of which, as noted, contradict the reality of biological sex. In fact, we understand such disorders by reference to normal sex development. There is no way even to detect a gender identity, and yet it has become the orthodoxy in large pockets of American medicine. As a result, the Department of Health and Human Services defines, quote, gender-affirming care, end quote, for adolescents, not as helping children become comfortable with their bodies, but as refashioning the body with drugs and surgery to better conform to the child's reported, quote, gender identity, end quote. Evidence for the benefits of this treatment are in very short supply. As a result, at least four countries in Northern Europe that started down this path before the U.S., such as the U.K., have now stepped back. The U.K.'s National Health Service now concedes that many teens reporting gender dysphoria should receive therapy in the hope that they will do what almost all such teens did before the craze, grow out of it. The far superior biblical view. The idea of gender identity itself is also the fruit of a false anthropology. It's the mongrel offspring of expressive individualism and the sexual revolution. It gets human beings wrong both as individuals and as social creatures. The biblical view, rightly understood, is far better than the alternatives. Gender identity fails to grasp what is so crisply described in Genesis 1. Man is, by nature, both a spiritual and material creature. We might say that as Jesus is truly human and truly divine, man is truly material and truly spiritual. Not merely material and not merely spiritual. Not half material and half spiritual. Both at one and the same time. Genesis says that in creating us, God took the dust of the earth, but he breathed into it the breath of life, Genesis 2:7. We are neither upright apes nor ghosts in meat suits. We are by nature embodied persons. Christians confess not just eternal life, but the resurrection of the body. Our personal survival between death and resurrection is an incomplete, temporary state. We are also sexually complementary creatures, not androgynous replicas. Healthy adults during their reproductive phase are biologically complete as individuals except for one function, reproduction. To fulfill God's command and blessing to our first parents, to be fruitful and multiply, It takes exactly one male and one female coming together. This gives rise to children. Thus, the institutions of marriage and family in which children are best raised are the social expression and guardrails of this biological reality. Note that I've run together the biblical view of the human person and family with biology. That's intentional. If the biblical view of man is true, then reason reflecting on human nature can't escape it. Even materialists assume they have free will. Even hardcore Cartesians know that too much drink or bodily vice can touch the soul. Even Marxist-tinged sociologists, when they're honest with the data, can't help but find that intact married parents are better for raising kids than the alternatives. But because of sin, we tend to distort the truth. Following the logic of the sexual revolution, we pretend that sex, marriage, and reproduction need not go together. And when it comes to the material and spiritual nature of human beings, we tend to lurch from one side of this compound truth to the other, rather than embrace the complex whole. How else to explain how materialism can coexist often in the same mind with transhumanism? The former imagines that we are nothing but chemicals arranged in a complex way. The latter imagines that we will soon upload ourselves to more durable hardware than these mortal shells. How else to explain gender ideology? It implies that one's identity is merely, quote, psychological self, end quote, as Carl Truman puts it, independent of the body. It is somehow gendered, whatever that means, but not sexed. It is immaterial and yet in need of a body refashioned with the latest technology to match it. This incoherent mess contradicts not just Christian revelation, but logic and natural reason itself. To fight gender ideology, Christians, Jews, and fellow travelers need not only offer a fuller biblical and much more coherent view of the human person. We must, using reason, defend basic biology.